Chapter 23. Economies had left him such a large surplus to draw upon. Mrs. Vervain was at home as usual. When one visits the cemetery, one expects to find the angel on the tombstone, and it struck Thursdale as another proof of his friend's good taste that as he had been in no undue haste to change her habits. The whole house appeared to count on his coming. The footman took his hat and overcoat as naturally as though there had been no lapse in his visits, and the drawing room at once enveloped him in that atmosphere of tacit intelligence which Mrs. Vervain imparted to her very furniture. It was a surprise that, in this general harmony of circumstances, Mrs. Vervain should herself sound the first false note. "You," she exclaimed, and the book she held slipped from her hand. It was crude, certainly, unless it were a touch of the finest art. The difficulty of classifying it disturbed Thursdale's balance. "Why not?" he said, restoring the book. "Isn't it my hour?" And as she made no answer, he added gently, "Unless it's someone else's?" She laid the book aside, and sank back into her chair. "Am mine, merely," she said. "I hope that doesn't mean that you're unwilling to share it with you?" "By no means. You're welcome to my last crust." He looked at her reproachfully. "Do you call this the last?" She smiled as he dropped into the seat across the hearth. "It's a way of giving it more flavor." He returned the smile. A visit to you doesn't need such condiments." She took this with just the right measure of retrospective amusement. But I want to put into this one a very special taste," she confessed. Her smile was so confident, so reassuring, that it lulled him into the imprudence of saying, "Why should you want it to be different from what was always so perfectly right?" She hesitated. "Doesn't the fact that it's the last constitute a difference? The last my last visit to you? Metaphorically, I mean there's a break in the continuity." Decidedly, she was pressing too hard. "Unlearning his arts already." "I don't recognize it," he said. "You unless you make me," he added, with a note that slightly stirred her attitude of languid attention. She turned to him with grave eyes. "Why you recognize no difference whatever?" "None except an added link in the chain." "An added link? And having one more thing to like you for, your letting Miss Gaynor see why I had already so many." He flattered himself that this turn had taken the least hint of fatuity from the phrase. Mrs. Vervain sank into her former easy pose. "W was it that you came for?" she asked, almost gaily. "If it is necessary to have a reason, that was one." "To talk to me about Miss Gaynor? To tell you how she talks about you? That will be very interesting, especially if you have seen her since her second visit to me." "Her second visit?" Thursdale pushed his chair back with a start and moved to another. "As she came to see you again?" "This morning, yes, by appointment." He continued to look at her blankly. "Why you sent for her?" "I didn't have to," she wrote and asked me last night. "But no doubt you have seen her since." Thursdale sat silent. He was trying to separate his words from his thoughts, but they still clung together inextricably. I saw her off just now at the station." "And she didn't tell you that as he had been here again?" "There was hardly time. I suppose there were people about," he floundered. "She'll write, then." He regained his composure. "Of course she'll write. Very often, I hope. You know I'm absurdly in love," he cried audaciously. She tilted her head back, looking up at him as he leaned against the chimney piece. He had leaned there so often that the attitude touched a pulse which set up a throbbing in her throat. Oh, my poor Thursdale," she murmured. "I suppose it's rather ridiculous," he owned, and as she remained silent, he added, with a sudden break, "Have you another reason for pitying me?" Her answer was another question. "Have you been back to your room since you left her?" "Since I left her at the station? I came straight here." Yes, you could." There was no reason. Her words passed into a silent musing. Thursdale moved nervously nearer. "Why you said you had something to tell me?" Perhaps I had better let her do so. There may be a letter at your rooms.
A letter? What do you mean?
A letter from her? What has happened?
His paleness shook her, and she raised a hand of reassurance.
Nothing has happened. Perhaps that is just the worst of it. You always hated, you know, she added incoherently, to have things happen.
You never would let them.
And now, well, that was what she came here for. I suppose you had guessed. To know if anything had happened.
Had happened?
He gazed at her slowly.
Between you and me?
He said with a rush of light. The words were so much cruder than any that had ever passed between them, that the color rose to her face. But she held his startled gaze.
You know, girls are not quite as unsophisticated as they used to be.
Are you surprised that such an idea should occur to her?
His own color answered hers.
It was the only reply that came to him.
Mrs. Vervain went on, smoothly, I suppose it might have struck you that there were times when we presented that appearance.
He made an impatient gesture.
A man's past is his own.
Perhaps it certainly never belongs to the woman who has shared it. But one learns such truths only by experience, and Miss Gaynor is naturally inexperienced.
Of course, but supposing her act a natural one, he floundered lamentably among his innuendos, still don't see how there was anything to take hold of.
There wasn't, well, then, escaped him, in crude satisfaction. But as she did not complete the sentence, he went on with a faltering laugh, she can hardly object to the existence of a mere friendship between us.
But she does, said Mrs. Vervain.
Thursdale stood perplexed. He had seen, on the previous day, no trace of jealousy or resentment in his betrothed. He could still hear the candid ring of the girl's praise of Mrs. Vervain. If she were such an abyss of insincerity as to dissemble distrust under such frankness, she must at least be more subtle than to bring her doubts to her rival for solution. The situation seemed one through which one could no longer move in a penumbra, and he let in a burst of light with the direct query, won't you explain what you mean?
Mrs. Vervain sat silent, not provokingly, as though to prolong his distress, but as if, in the attenuated phraseology he had taught her, it was difficult to find words robust enough to meet his challenge. It was the first time he had ever asked her to explain anything. And as he had lived, so long in dread of offering elucidations which were not wanted, that she seemed unable to produce one on the spot.
At last she said slowly, she came to find out if you were really free.
Thursdale colored again.
If free? He stammered, with a sense of physical disgust at contact with such crassness.
Yes, if I had quite done with you.
She smiled in recovered security.
It seems she likes clear outlines, as he has a passion for definitions.
Yes, well? He said, wincing at the echo of his own subtlety.
Well, and when I told her that you had never belonged to me, she wanted me to define my status, to know exactly where I had stood all along.
Thursdale sat gazing at her intently. His hand was not yet on the clue.
And even when you had told her that, even when I had told her that I had had no status, that I had never stood anywhere, in any sense she meant, said Mrs. Vervain, slowly, then she wasn't satisfied, it seems.
He uttered an uneasy exclamation.
As she didn't believe you,
you mean?
I mean that she did believe me.
Too thoroughly.
Well, then in God's name, what did she want?
Something more, those were the words she used.
Something more?
Between you and me?
Is it a conundrum?
He laughed awkwardly.
Girls are not what they were in my day. They are no longer forbidden to contemplate the relation of the sexes.
So it seems, he commented.
But since, in this case, there wasn't any, he broke off, catching the dawn of a revelation in her gaze.
That's just it. The unpardonable offense has been in our not offending.
He flung himself down despairingly.
I give it up.
What did you tell her?
He burst out with sudden crudeness.
The exact truth.
If I had only known, she broke off with a beseeching tenderness,
Won't you believe that I would still have light for you?
Light for me? Why on earth should you have light for either of us?
To save you two, I'd you from her to the last. As I've hidden you from myself all these years.
She stood up with a sudden tragic import in her movement.
Why you believe me capable of that, don't you?
If I had only guessed, but I have never known a girl like her. She had the truth out of me with a spring.
The truth that you and I had never, never in all these years.
Oh, she knew why she measured us both in a flash.
She didn't suspect me of having haggled with you. Her words pelted me like hail.
He just took what he wanted sifted, and sorted you to suit his taste.
Burned out the gold and left a heap of cinders.
And you let him, you let yourself be cut in bits.
She mixed her metaphors a little, be cut in bits, and used or discarded, while all the while every drop of blood in you belonged to him.
But he's Shylock and you have bled to death of the pound of flesh he has cut out of you.
... But she despises me the most, you know, far the most, Mrs. Vervain ended.
The words fell strangely on the scented stillness of the room.
They seemed out of harmony with its setting of afternoon intimacy, the kind of intimacy on which at any moment, a visitor might intrude without perceptibly lowering the atmosphere.
It was as though a grand opera singer had strained the acoustics of a private music room.
Thursdale stood up, facing his hostess.
Half the room was between them, but they seemed to stare close at each other now that the veils of reticence and ambiguity had fallen.
His first words were characteristic.
"As she does despise me, then," he exclaimed.
"She thinks the pound of flesh you took was a little too near the heart."
He was excessively pale.
"Please tell me exactly what she said of me."
"She did not speak much of you.
She is proud.
But I gather that, while she understands lover indifference, her eyes have never been open to the many intermediate shades of feeling.
At any rate, she expressed an unwillingness to be taken with reservations.
She thinks you would have loved her better if you had loved someone else first.
The point of view is original. She insists on a man with a past.
Oh, a past. If she's serious, I could rake up a past,"
he said with a laugh.
"So I suggested.
But as he has her eyes on his particular portion of it, she insists on making it a test case.
She wanted to know what you had done to me, and before I could guess her drift, I blundered into telling her."
Thursdale drew a difficult breath.
"I never supposed your revenge."
Gutenberg edition.
End of chapter.